Yudches Amid Beis. One second, I'll tell you in a second. By you, it's, well, by me it's 18b1. By you it might be, it's probably 18b1 too. Okay, we're going to start 2, 4, 6, 7 lines in the top.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Amir Avgidl. Okay, we're going to start. Amir Avgidl, Amir Rav. Rav Gidl said the name of Rav. Okay, this is basically connected to the previous Gemara about eating things of the Beis HaMikdash when you're not allowed to, and how you learn it out, and how many times you get whipped, and so on and so forth. But this basically starts a new Gemara. It says, Amar Rav Gidl, Amar Rav, Rav Gidl said the name of Rav. Kohen she'ochol michatos va'oshem lefnei zerika. If a Kohen ate from the sin offerings, or from different types of, chatos is one type of sin offering, oshem is another type of sin offering. If they ate it before lefnei zerika, before the blood was squirted on the mizbeach, like they get malchus. And the Gemara is going to learn it out from a pasuk. Meaning, even though this is normally the meat that a Kohen does eat part of the chatos, he does eat part of the asham, nevertheless, he can only eat it after the blood of the carbon was squirted on the mizbeach.
What on the mizbeach?
Squirted.
Oh,
they used to squirt the blood.
Oh, sprinkled.
Sprinkled.
Yeah.
Okay, sprinkled, squirted.
Ben, you put it in a squirt gun?
Yeah. He says, my time of why? The Amakra, because it says in the pasuk as follows. Va'ochlu eisam, you should eat them, asher kupar bahem, those whose sin is atoned. La'achar kapara in, after redemption, after forgiveness, yes. Lefnei kapara loy, before kapara no. Meaning as follows. When a person brings a sin offering to the Beis HaMikdash, the forgiveness process is over when the entire sacrifice process is done. Now, part of the sacrifice process is shechting. Then part of the process is sprinkling the blood on the mizbeach. So the Torah says you can eat the korban, which for the person which was forgiven. Which means, when are you allowed to eat it? After it was forgiven. Meaning after the blood was sprinkled on the mizbeach. But if the blood wasn't sprinkled on the mizbeach, thank you. So he wasn't forgiven yet, the one that brought the korban. So therefore the Kohen can't eat it. But the Gemara says an interesting halacha, lava bamechlal eser lavi, a prohibition which is derived from a positive statement. It has the law of a negative statement. Meaning we know as follows in the Torah, for negative mitzvahs you can get whipped. For positive mitzvahs you don't get whipped. Meaning if somebody doesn't put on tefillin, if somebody doesn't bench lulav and esrog, if you don't do a positive mitzvah, you don't get whipped. You don't get punished. Now, the Torah basically is saying a positive commandment. You should eat it after the person is forgiven. Which means, you should eat it after the blood is sprinkled on the mizbeach. So that's a positive mitzvah. From here we're deriving that only afterwards, but before that, you're not allowed to. So even though it's not a clear-cut negative commandment, the Torah doesn't say, don't eat it before the blood is sprinkled. It's a positive mitzvah, you should eat it afterwards. But the rule is a negative commandment, which is derived from a positive commandment, has a law of a negative commandment. And therefore, you can get whipped. This is what the Gemara made this conclusion up to now. So Masev Rav asks on this concept. And he says, if you tell me that a negative commandment derived from a positive commandment gets whipped, then I have a question from another pasuk. It says in the laws concerning kosher food, it says, V'chol behema mafrasas parsa, any animal that has split hoofs. V'shisasha sheshtei prasis, that is separated, you know, the two hoofs. Malagata babahema, which chooses cud. As you know, the two signs of a kosher animal is, it chooses cud and has split hoofs. So the Torah says, any animal that chooses cud, or rather, has split hoofs and chooses cud, eisa techelu, those you are allowed to eat. Now, so we can learn out from here that this is what you're allowed to eat, but you're not allowed to eat another type of an animal. In other words, Rav is asking a very simple question. The Torah says in the pasuk the following statement, and again, every word in Torah is exact. The Torah doesn't use extra words for no reason at all. If the Torah is using an extra word, it's obviously for a specific purpose. The Torah says, animals that chew their cud and has split hooves, you may eat. Which means, an animal that doesn't, you're not allowed to eat. So, I don't need anything more. Why does the Torah come along with an additional pasuk and say, you're not allowed to eat an animal that doesn't chew its cud and has split hooves? I can derive it already from the positive aspect. And the fact that I still need a negative pasuk to tell me that shows that a negative mitzvah, which comes from a positive mitzvah, is a positive mitzvah, not a negative mitzvah. In other words, the Gemara is just talking about the punishment aspect. Obviously, if the Torah says, this you may eat, it implies that what you, if it's not this, you can't eat it. The only question is, can you get punished for it? Can you get malchus? Because does it have a law of a positive mitzvah? Or does it have a law of a negative mitzvah? Now, normally in Torah, a negative commandment is one that the Torah says, don't eat chazer. So if you eat chazer, you get whipped. But over here, the Torah says the following. The Torah doubles itself. The Torah repeats itself. The Torah says, an animal that has split hooves and chews its cud, it you may eat. So according to Rava, I should be able to derive that an animal that doesn't, you're not allowed to eat. And not only are you not allowed to eat it, but if you do eat it, you're going to get whipped. Yet, the Torah comes along again with a pasuk and says, an animal that doesn't chew its cud and doesn't have split hooves, you're not allowed to eat. Why does the Torah teach me that? Why do I need a double pasuk? One second. So, the Gemara is asking Rava's question. So the Gemara answers, you know what? You're right. We have to change Rav Gidol Amarav's statement, because the statement obviously is incorrect. If you want to learn Rav Gidol's statement, this is the way you have to learn it. Amar Rav Gidol Amarav is not a kohen. Until now we said a kohen who eats the meat of a karm chatzas or ashen before the blood is squirted on the mizbeach, he gets malchus. He says, no, he's not going to get malchus, because there is no explicit negative commandment that a kohen can't. Who is going to get whipped? He says, Zar sha'och michatas va'oshim lefnei zirika. If a Yisrael or a Levi, who anyway is not allowed to eat the meat of a chatas and an oshim, because only a kohen could eat it. If a Yisrael eats it before the blood was squirted on the mizbeach, potter, he won't get whipped. Why? My time, Adam Ruka, because the pasuk says as follows. Va'ochlu eisa mashekupar bahem. It says in the Torah as follows. The kohen must eat it after the forgiveness is done, which means after the blood is squirted on the mizbeach. Right. Now, which the pasuk allows the kohen to eat it. When though? After the blood is squirted. From there we learn that Yisrael is not allowed to, because only a kohen could. Not a Yisrael. The pasuk says, the kohen may eat it after the squirting of the blood. Which means a Yisrael can't. But when does the Torah prohibit the Yisrael to do it? When a kohen could do it. When a kohen is allowed to eat the meat, that's when a Yisrael is not allowed to eat meat. But before the squirting of the blood, even the kohen can't eat it. So you can't derive a negative commandment for a Yisrael if he's not allowed to. He's not allowed to eat it anyway, even after squirting of the blood. But the fact is, the Torah is teaching us that a Yisrael or a Levi, who's not a kohen, who ate the blood of a karm chatas before the blood was squirted on the mizbeach, is forbidden, but he's not going to get whipped. Why? Because kol hecha de kederin above v'achlu eisam, asher kupa behem, because when can we apply the rule that you can eat it after the forgiveness is done? There it says, zar lo yechal kedesh. A Yisrael or a Zar is a person who's not a kohen, is not allowed to eat it. Meaning as follows. The Torah explicitly says a Yisrael can't eat it. A kohen could eat it, a Yisrael can't. What is the Gemara deriving? You know when a Yisrael can't? When a kohen could. When can a kohen eat it? After the blood is squirted on the mizbeach. Then a kohen is allowed to eat it. So then the Torah says, a kohen, yes, and a Yisrael not. But in a time when even a kohen is not allowed to do it, there is no negative commandment telling a Jew, clearly in a negative way, that you're not allowed to eat it. And if it's not clearly stating you're not allowed to eat it, there's no negative commandment. And if there's no clear-cut negative commandment, he's not going to get whipped.
So why is it prohibited?
Oh, because the Torah says, from other places you can't do it anyway. Yeah, but it's only derived from a positive mitzvah. because the Torah says in different places you're allowed to eat it after the blood, right? Which means before the blood not, but that's not a clear-cut negative commandment. It's only something we derive from a positive mitzvah. And the Gemara's conclusion, meanwhile, is something derived from a positive mitzvah is not a negative mitzvah to get punished. It's forbidden, but you can't get punished for it. Eat it after the person is forgiven. Now, when is the person forgiven? After the blood is squirted on the Mizbech, not only after it's slaughtered. And the whole next few pieces of Gemara, which are going to be discussing different things, we have to understand. When the Torah says, this says what has to be done. Okay? The Torah doesn't mean when half is done, it's good enough. The Torah means the whole thing has to be done. Right? Sometimes the Torah says until it's completely done. And sometimes the Torah doesn't say that. And the Gemara is going to discuss this a little bit. It's very interesting. The Torah says, you must eat the meat after the blood is squirted on the Mizbeach. How do I know that? Because the Torah says you can eat it after the person is forgiven. When is a person forgiven? When the process is complete. What's the carbon process? Shechting, killing the animal, slaughtering it, and then squirting the blood on the Mizbeach. When that process is done, the person is forgiven. That's when the Torah says a Kohen could eat it. From here we derive that before the blood is squirted on the Mizbeach, you're not allowed to eat it, correct? But it's not a clear-cut negative commandment, don't eat the meat before the blood is squirted. And if it's not a clear-cut negative commandment, you can't whip somebody for it. You can't punish them for it.
So even though it exists, it's not explicitly stated, you can't do it.
There's a lot of negative commandments that you don't get. Even, number one, if it's not an explicit negative commandment, even though it's derived from a positive commandment, right? It's not necessarily, meanwhile in the Gemara, it is not necessarily a negative commandment as far as whipping. Just like we learned in the Gemara, if you remember, a negative commandment that has no action, you also can't whip somebody for, even though he's transgressing the negative commandment. For instance, the Torah says, don't acquire chametz. Don't have chametz on Pesach, right? You're not allowed to have chametz on Pesach. Lo yira l'cha chametz, v'lo yimatzi l'cha chametz. Chametz is not to be seen. Yeah, 9 o'clock. You can come and you can stay there if you want. Yeah, we don't bite. Not yet. Can't tell you it's going to be later. The Torah says you're not allowed to have chametz in your house on Pesach, correct? Now, what happens if somebody didn't do anything? They had chametz from before Pesach, and they just left it. They have chametz in their house in Pesach. Yeah? Did they do an action? They do an action. They didn't do an action. They just didn't burn it. If somebody buys chametz in the middle of Pesach, he's going to get whipped. But if somebody left chametz over, they didn't do anything. And a negative commandment that doesn't have an action, you can't punish somebody for it. In order to punish somebody for a negative commandment, it has to be a clear-cut, action-packed, negative commandment that's not connected to a positive mitzvah that can rectify the negative mitzvah. That's the criteria. But if it's not a clear-cut, negative commandment, that the Torah says, don't do it, it's only something we derive that because the Torah says, you could eat it, you should eat it, you must eat it, after the sprinkling of the blood, that teaches that you can't eat it before. But the Torah doesn't say that clearly. So you can't get whipped. Here the Gemara is taking it a step further. When a Yisrael eats it, the Torah says as follows. The Kohen can eat it after the squirting. A Yisrael can't. When is that negative commandment going on? The negative commandment is going on when a Kohen is allowed to eat it, a Yisrael can't. When can a Kohen eat it? Only after the blood is squirted on the Mizbeach. Sprinkled on the Mizbeach. If the Kohen can eat it, then it's not a unique negative commandment for the Yisrael. So the Gemara says, if Yisrael ate from the Karban Chatos before the blood was sprinkled on the Mizbeach, granted it's forbidden, but he's not going to get whipped.
Does he get whipped afterwards?
No.
So he eats it afterwards?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But why? There's no explicit negative commandment.
It says, look in the Gemara, V'chol zar lo yoichal. A foreigner cannot eat it. Foreigner as in a non-Kohen. Says clearly, he cannot eat it. And if the Torah says a zar is a stranger, meaning whoever's not a kohen, including Yisrael, Levi, whatever, The Torah says it clearly. Otherwise, you're right. We wouldn't get whipped anyway. Now the Gemara returns to an earlier Gemara. There's a mitzvah in the Torah, you have to bring Bikurim. Bikurim are the first fruits that are from the seven species that Eretz Yisrael is praised with. You have to go down to the field when the fruits are ripening, and you put a string around them, the first fruits, and you have to take the Bikurim, and you have to bring them to the Beis HaMikdash. We won't say where it is. The Beis HaMikdash. Now, in the Beis HaMikdash, what does the Torah say? The Torah describes a few, again, the process.
Right now it's in Jerusalem.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. The process is, you have to bring Bikurim, you see?
Yep.
You see? The Torah says, spilling it again? The Torah says as follows. You have to bring Bikurim. If you look in Parshas Kisavi in the Chumash, the Torah says the following din. You have to bring the Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash. And then the Torah says, V'nachta Sham. You have to put it down. Then the Torah says, this is the second process. V'anisa V'yamarta. You have to start reading a bunch of psukim in the Chumash. Arami Evid Ovi, that Lavan tried to destroy us, and God saved us, and now I'm bringing the first fruits, and God looked down from that at the beginning of Parshas Kisavi. So the Torah has two processes in the midst of bringing Bikurim. Number one, you have to bring it and put it down, and then you have to read the psukim. Now the discussion in the Gemara is going to be, what happens if you put it down and you don't read? And you eat the Bikurim. Did you do a sin or not? In other words, is the reading mandatory as far as being able to eat it? Or once you put it down, it's already Bikurim. When does it become the holiness of Bikurim? When you put it down or when you finish reading? By Karbanis, we know for sure it's not only the shechting, it's the sprinkling on the Mizbeach. That we know, that's a given. But the question, what's the story of Bikurim? So the Rav said, Bikurim, when it comes to the first fruits, bringing it down, put it down, placement, okay, is essential. Kriya, ein makev is b'hem. The reading is not essential, which means the Kohenim can technically eat the fruits before the owner reads the psukim in the Chumash. Because it already became Bikurim. Because the question, when does it become Bikurim? Does it become Bikurim? You're the 10th guy again. Twice in one night. Is it when the guy puts it down, it becomes Bikurim? Or it doesn't become Bikurim until the process is finished, which is also the reading? So Al-Razir says in the name of Rabbi Ishiya, putting it down makes it Bikurim, even if you don't read it. Again, you have to read it, but that's not what's going to make it Bikurim. So the Gemara asks the question, or me, Amir Abulazar Hachi, can Abulazar say such a statement that the primary thing of Bikurim is putting it down, not the reading? Amir Abulazar, Amir Abeshia, Abulazim, Abulazar said in the name of Rabeshia, Hefish Bikurim, Kedim Achag. If somebody brought Bikurim before Sukkis, I'll explain in a second. V'over Aleim Achag, and the Sukkis, in other words, he separated Bikurim before Sukkis, but he didn't bring them to the Beis HaMikdash until after Sukkot. The din is yirkavu. They have to be let to rot. Meaning as follows. The appropriate time for bringing Bikurim, according to Halacha in the Chumash, is from Shavuos until Sukkot. You need Shavuos until Sukkot is the time for bringing Bikurim. So he says, what happens if the guy designated them as Bikurim before Sukkot? So he was okay. But he didn't bring them to the Beis HaMikdash until after Sukkot. Now it's already too late. But the question is, but he did designate them on time. So he says, it's no good, and you have to let the fruits rot. Because it's not kosher Bikurim. But they just can't be eaten by anybody else, because you did designate them as Bikurim. So they're like, the holiness of Bikurim, that nobody else can eat them, but a Kohen can't either, because they're not brought in the right time, so you have to let them rot. Worthless. Huh? If you designate a female animal for a carbon when it has to be a male, you didn't do anything. It's worthless. If you designate a fruit that's not, if you designate apples as bikurim, it's worthless because it's not the dates, figs, pomegranates, olives, I mean the fruits. So the Gemara says, my lav, why is the reason why you have to let them rot? Probably, mishum dolematza lemikra leil, because he can't reverse, you can't recite the verses after Sukkos. Meaning as follows. The Mishnah says, and this is just a din, the Gemara learns out from Psukim, Bikurim, like we said, you have to bring them, put them down, and recite the verses. The only proper time of doing it is between Shavuos and Sukkos. What happens, the Gemara says, if you brought them after Sukkos, between Sukkos and Chanukah, you could bring Bikurim, but you can't read any of the Psukim, because it's too late. Why? Because it speaks about v'samachta, you should be happy. Sukkos is the time of Simcha. You blew it. It's after Sukkos already. You can't say Psukim v'samachta when you're over with the Simcha already. Okay, so now the Braisa says as follows. What happens if a guy designated Bikurim between Shavuos and Sukkos, but he didn't bring him until after Sukkos? What's the din? You have to let him rot. So the Gemara thought, that's what the Rabbi Elazar says. So the Gemara is thinking, oh, you know, why not? Why do I have to let it rot? Because he can't read. He can't say the Psukim. And if he can't say the Psukim, if you can't read the Psukim, the whole thing is not kosher. So how could you tell me before, the same Rabbi Elazar says, putting it down is enough, I don't even need to read it. Here he seems to imply that the reading is vital. Because if you bring him after Sukkos, you have to let him rot, because he can't read. The Gemara says, if you're telling me that the reading of the Psukim doesn't, is not, ma'akiv, is not essential, why should they be let to rot? Let him bring the Bikurim, and let the Kohenim eat it. What's the difference? So the Gemara answers, could Rab Zeira, like Rab Zeira says. The Amr Rab Zeira says a very interesting halacha. Koloroi lebila, anything which is fit to be mixed, ein bila ma'kevez bay, even if you don't mix it, it's good enough. It's a very interesting halacha. I didn't even talk about it here. Okay. There's a din as follows. When you have to mix the oil with the flour by karbonis, so it has to be mixable. So the Gemara says it has to be a certain amount, like 1% this to 60, 1 times this to 60 times that. And the Gemara says if the percentage is bigger than that, it's not mixable. You can't mix it. So therefore you have to put it into two pots. You can't mix it in one pot because it's not, you just can't mix it. Yet Rab Zeira says there's a din that even though the halacha is anything fit to mix, even if you didn't mix it, it's okay. But if it's not fit to mix, it's not kosher. It's a very famous rule in Gemara. Koloroi lebila. As long as it's fixable, it's mixable, which isn't correct English. As long as it's mixable, it's kosher, even if you don't mix it. But if it's not mixable, it's not kosher, even though you really don't need to mix it. If it, the percentage is too much. The flour and the oil, there's too much flour in the vessel. In other words, there's a carbon mincha. Carbon mincha is a flour offering. So the Gemara says, you need a certain percentage of oil to flour. If there's too much flour in the vessel, you can't mix it. So the Gemara says it's not good. So the Gemara, not here, and Gemara Menachas asked the question, but we know the halacha is, even if you don't mix it, it's kosher. So what's the big deal? So Rab Zeira says, if it's fit to be mixed, it's mixed, even though you don't mix it. But if it's not fixed to be mixed, if it's not fit to be mixed, it's no good. This is the rule that he gave. And it's in a certain respect, in Gemara world, it's very logical. Because the fact that it's able to be mixed, that's what the Torah wants. Even though you don't mix it. But if it's not able to be mixed, then it's no good. So Rab Zeira answers, the Gemara is answering like Rab Zeira as follows. Same thing with Bikurim. If the Bikurim could be read, then even if you don't need to read it, even if you didn't read it, it's kosher. But if you can't read it, it's no good. That's why if you designated it before Sukkot, and you brought it after Sukkot, you have to let it rot. The question is, why? Because you can't read. So the Gemara says, well, who cares if you can't read? You just got through saying that you don't need to read it. So the Gemara is asking, yeah. If you're able to read it and you don't, it's kosher. But if you're not able to read the Pesukim because it's after Sukkot and it's too late, so then it's no good. So it's not a contradiction between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says, the truth of the matter is, bringing the Bikurim, putting it down without saying any of the Pesukim, makes the Bikurim kosher. The Kohen could eat it. Why if you designated it before Sukkot and you brought it after Sukkot, you have to let him rot because you can't read, who cares? The answer is now you can't read. And if you can't read, it's no good.
Is that a love in the Torah?
What's a love?
To actually read it after Sukkot. Is it a love?
No, it's a positive mitzvah to read it. But the Gemara learns out the fact that the Torah says you have to read it, v'samachta b'chol ha'tov. You're happy. When is Man Simchaseinu? Sukkot. Right? Not Pesach, not Shavuos, even though v'samachta b'chagecha is in each Yom Tov, right? Torah says you have to be happy every Yom Tov. But where do we say primarily is Man Simchaseinu? Is in the time of Sukkot. Because Sukkot was the harvest time, everybody brought things into the home. It was physical, agriculturally, it was a happy time. Financially, that's when they got the money. But, so the Torah says, the fact that the Torah is emphasizing the concept of Simcha by the Psukim, it has to be read by the time of the Simcha. Once the Simcha passed, you can't read anymore.
I'm saying, is it allowed to eat it, to eat the fruits, or you have to let them rot?
No, it says you have to let them rot.
And if a person eats it, is it?
I don't know. It's a negative mitzvah derived from a positive mitzvah. Oh. It's not a clear-cut negative mitzvah. The Torah doesn't say don't eat them when you can't read it. The Torah says eat them when you can read it. So we learn out that if you can't read it, you're not allowed to eat it. But at the time you could, even though you don't, it's okay. In other words, if you're able to take a test, even if you don't, it's okay. If you're not able to take a test, then it's no good. Okay, so now the Gemara says, along the same lines, the Gemara is just quoting in the name of somebody else. Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Masna l'kad Rav Asi Amar Rav Yechon, Rav Acha bar Yaakov learned this in the name of Rav Asi Amar Rav Yechon, not in the name of Rabbi Elazar, but in the name of somebody else. And he asked the question, Rav Yechon and Rav Yechon. He asked the question, Rav Yechon and himself. Just like we just asked the contradiction between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Elazar. That one place Rabbi Elazar says you don't have to read it. And another place Rabbi Elazar says you have to make it rot. Meaning, seemingly, that reading is important. So the Gemara asked the same contradiction of Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Yechon. In one place, Rabbi Yechon said, you don't need to read by Bikurim. Yet, how can you say Rabbi Yechon said that by Bikurim? The putting it down, the placement, is what is essential. Kriya in Makavis, but the reading isn't. For boy, minei. Ravasi has the shayla from Rabbi Yechonin, the same Rabbi Yechonin. And he asked him a very interesting shayla. Bikurim meimasim mutarim lakoyanim. That's a mamish a very clear question. At what time can the koyanim start eating bikurim? At which stage can the koyanim start eating bikurim? Va'amalei and Rabbi Yechonin answered, Haruyan lakriya, those that are fit to read, mishayikra aleihem, when you read it. V'she'ein ruyim l'kriya, and when they're not fit to be read, mishoro p'nei abayis, once they go into the base of the temple face, meaning even if they're before they're placed and in front of the mizbeach, meaning as follows. This is a very strange din, because Rabbi Yechon is contradicting himself in both dinim. He asked a question like this: when he asked Rabbi Yechon in a shayla, when are bikurim edible for the Koyanim? So Rabbi Yechon said as follows. Those people that have to bring the Bikurim and read it after you read it. Which right away contradicts what he just said, because he just got through saying you don't have to read it. And then he says, those people that don't read, for instance, you bring it after Sukkot, or a person will tell you another case, where you can't read it, as soon as they enter the temple courtyard, even before you put it down in front of the Koyanim, you're allowed to eat it already. That contradicts what he said before, that you have to put it down in order to eat it. So both cases are contradicting Rabbi Yochanan himself. There's an interesting shaila in Halacha. I mean, Rashi says in Chumash, a convert can't read the Bikurim. Why not? He speaks about the land that you gave to our fathers. The convert's fathers didn't get the Eretz Yisrael. They got the whatever country they were from. So he says the Ger can't. In fact, Halacha discusses how could they say in davening, Elokeinu v'elokei Avraham, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, they're not his forefathers. And the answer is, over there you're talking about Avraham. Avraham Avinu was called Av Hamayim Goyim. Hashem said to Avraham after he changed his name, I'm making you the father of all nations. So if Avraham is the father of all nations, Ger can say Elokeinu v'elokei Avraham. But when you're talking about the land that God gave them, which is the reading of the Bikurim, a Ger can't say the land you gave my father, my forefathers, because he didn't. It's not true. So the din is, a Ger, the Mishnah says, brings Bikurim, but he doesn't say the Psukim. Now, when can the Kohen eat the Ger's Bikurim? So Rabbi Yechanan said, as soon as they come into the atmosphere of the Beis HaMikdash. So that contradicts what Rabbi Yechanan said before, you have to at least put it down. So number one, Rabbi Yechanan says, when you need to read it, you can only eat it after you read it, which contradicts what he said before, that you can even eat it before reading. And here he says you have to put it down to be able to eat it, and he says even if you don't put it down, you can eat it. What?
Does that mean like Rabbi Akiva? I mean, he brought Bikurim, but he didn't say he didn't say the Pesukim?
First of all, Rabbi Akiva wasn't a Ger. Rabbi Akiva's father was a Ger.
Oh.
Rabbi Akiva's mother was Jewish.
Oh, okay.
So... Rabbi Kiva wasn't the Ger.
Oh, I thought his parents...
No. Rabbi Kiva... The Rambam says that his father, Yosef... Akiva and Yosef, the Rambam writes, Yosef, Aviv, I remember that. Ger Tzadikoyo. Rabbi Kiva was born a Jew. His mother was Jewish.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Yeah. Are you allowed to send a shliach to be employed?
You could send a shliach, yeah. It's a mitzvah to do it by yourself better. But obviously, like anything else, you can make a shliach. Okay, so now the Gemara concludes the question. Kasha kriya kriya, it's a question reading on reading. Kasha nocha nocha, it's a question on putting down and putting down. No, it's a thing. In other words, here Rabbi Yechin said, you don't need to read it and you can eat it. Here he says you can only eat it after reading. Here he says you have to put it down to eat it. And then he says you don't even have to put it down to eat it. So Rabbi Yechin contradicted himself completely. So the Gemara says like this. Kriya kriya le kasha. You can't ask a question from either. Why not? Harab Shimon, Harabanan. One time, Rabbi Yechanan holds like Rabbi Shimon, and one time he's like the Chachamim. Meaning, like the Gemara said before, Rabbi Shimon says reciting is essential. The Chachamim hold reciting is not essential. So no, Rabbi Yechanan holds like Rabbi Shimon. You can't ask a question. Here he holds like Rabbi Shimon that reciting is important. No, I'm sorry. The second statement of Rabbi Yechanan, The second statement of Rabbi Yechanan that said that it's essential to read, that's Rabbi Shimon's opinion. The first opinion that says you don't need to read it, it's not essential, that's the Chachamim's opinion. So Rabbi Yechanan is just quoting two different opinions. One opinion is Rabbi Shimon's opinion that reading is essential. And Rabbanan hold, it's not essential. Hanoch, hanoch, nami lekasha, and also the putting down and the placement versus the placement is also not a contradiction, because Harab Yehuda, Harabban. One is according to the place opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and the Gemara is going to prove soon. And Harabban, the first statement, the placement is essential, is according to the Chachamim. Meaning, Rabbi Yechanan is saying two dinim, okay? One din according to Rabbi Yehuda, one din according to the Chachamim. One din according to Rabbi Shimon, one din according to the Chachamim. So you can't ask a contradiction, because here he's saying like him, here he's saying like his opinion, and you can't ask a contradiction, because he's not saying his own opinion both ways. He's saying this is Rabbanan's opinion, this is Rabbi Shimon's opinion, this is the Chachamim's opinion, this is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. What does Rabbi Yehuda hold? Rabbi Yehuda hold that a placement is never essential. Rabbi Yehuda holds it's never essential to put it down. Why? The Gemara asks, my Rabbi Yehuda, where do we see this according to Rabbi Yehuda? Where do we see Rabbi Yehuda says such a thing? So Gemara says, the Tanya, we learned in the Braisa as follows. It's also a very interesting Gemara. You see the way the Gemara learns. It's remarkable the way they analyze the psukim of the Chumash and they derive laws based on words and letters, and it's remarkable. The Tanya, it says in the Pasuk as follows. Rabbi Yehuda says, when it says in the Chumash, by Bikurim, vihinachte, putting it down, it doesn't mean putting it down, it means waving. In other words, it's not, Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't have to put down the Bikurim. Either Torah says, put it down, it doesn't mean putting it down, it means waving it. What does that mean? Because ata emed zutunuf. So like the Gemara is just asking on itself. You're saying it means waving. Maybe means taka, putting down. Putting down usually means putting down. Well, if you tell somebody put it down, you don't mean wave it. So the Buddha says, why am I saying it means waving if really the Torah says put it down? So he says, because the Torah already said before vihinichay, put it down. The Torah said already a word, vihinichay, to put it down. Why is the Torah using another word, vihinachta, again, put it down? Well, the Torah has to tell you 10 times to do something. Not little kids. You have to tell them 10 times to do something and they still don't listen. The Torah says it once, that's it. Why does the Torah have to say a second time, vihinachta? So Rabbi Yehuda says, you see from here that it means waving. And the Gemara is going to explain what does it mean. Hamani mekayim vihinachta. So what does it mean, vihinachta? It means tenufa. It means waving. And this is an interesting concept. But the question is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it does say once vihinachte. So why did Rabbi Yehuda say putting it down is not important? It says twice even. So there's an interesting rule concerning Karbanos. When the Torah says do something, and this is a very interesting concept, b'chlal, in many places in Torah, not only by Karbanos. The Torah says do something. There's what's called lechatchila, the proper way of doing it, and then there's what's called b'di'evet. In other words, you can't mix meat and milk. But if b'di'evet, it happened already, and it was nullified 1 in 60, you know, you could eat it. That doesn't mean you could put in 1 ounce of milk into 100 ounces of meat. Lechatchila, you can't do it. B'di'evet, it's kosher. There's what's called lechatchila, and there's b'di'evet. The same thing in positive ways. The Torah says, this is the way to do it. What happens, though, if you didn't do it that way? Does that disqualify it? Maybe the Torah means, this is the proper way of doing it. But if you didn't, it's also kosher. There's a rule by sacrifices. If the Torah doesn't repeat itself, even if you didn't do it, it's okay. That's the rule. If the Torah means that even b'di'evit, it's no good, the Torah has to repeat itself by the korban. The Torah has to say twice. If the Torah only says once by korbanos, it means this is the right way to do it. But even if you didn't, it's still kosher. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it says vihinachte twice. But one, Rabbi Yehuda says, means putting down. But the second one is extra, according to Rabbi Yehuda, so it means waving. So how many times does the Torah say put it down? Only once. Not twice. If the Torah says put it down only once, so even if you don't, it doesn't matter. Because the second one, he doesn't use for the double putting it down. He uses it means waving.
But I have a question. What? So the first, so I understand. When it says enough for the first time,
yeah.
Does that mean he puts it down first and then he waves it? Or?
In other words, let me explain this concept. We know, according to halacha, you have to wave it and you have to put it down. We know that. You have to wave it and you have to put it down. The Torah doesn't say clearly wave it. We're learning it out. Okay? So Rabbi Yehuda says, 1 minute. Where are we going to learn it out from? From the second, vihinachti. From the second putting it down. Okay? So Rabbi Yehuda says as follows. One pasuk teaches me you have to put it down. But I need the second one to learn, teach me another din, that you have to wave it. Right? So therefore, I don't have a second time putting it down, which means even if you didn't, it's also kosher. So now the Gemara asks, so the opinion that argues against Rabbi Yehuda, what are they going to do with this? Because where do they learn waving from? And if the double vihinachtoi means to tell me that you must put it down, and if not, it's no good, so where do we learn waving from? Now we're stuck, we don't have a waving pasuk. So the Gemara continues and said, who argues on Rabbi Yehuda that holds putting it down must be? He says it's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. It's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Why? The Tanya says in the pasuk as follows. It says in the pasuk, the kohen should take the basket from your hand. Now, what is he taking it for? What's he taking it for? He says, "Limit al bikulim shetu'un tenufa." That teaches me you have to wave it. In other words, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, waving, I have another pasuk. Waving, it says, the kohen should take the basket from your hand. If the kohen is taking the basket from your hand, that already means waving. Now I got two vihinachtois. Because waving I learned from a different pasuk. So now I have two vihinachtois. One to teach me you must put it down. And one teaching me, even if you don't put it, if you don't put it down, it's no good. Rabbi Yehuda, though, doesn't learn waving from lokacha kena tenami adacha, to take the basket. He learns it means take the basket. Where does he learn waving from? From the second vihinachtoi. If he learns waving from the second vihinachtoi, you have only one pasuk to teach me, you have to put it down. If there's only one pasuk teaching me, you have to put it down, so then I don't have a second pasuk to teach me, it must be done. So therefore, the Buddha holds, you don't need waving. If you didn't wave, it's also good. If you didn't put it down, it's also good, and therefore, as soon as it hits the atmosphere of the Beis HaMikdash, as soon as the Bikurim are brought into the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, it's already kosher to eat. Even if you didn't do any of the other processes.
All you have to do is wave according to the Bikurim.
Right.
So are there three things? There's putting down, there's bending over, and then waving?
Right.
So according to the Bikurim, all you have to
do? It's not handing, it's taking. The Kohen takes it. It doesn't say give it to the Kohen. The Pasuk says, the Kohen should take it from your hand.
So who waves it? The Kohen?
The Gemara is going to discuss now what you do. The Gemara is going to discuss the owner holds the basket from underneath. The Kohen puts his hands underneath the owner's hands and they wave it together. There was in Chumash a waving offering with the Levim. And some of the things, but that has to be tenufa anyway. You have to wave it. What?
Does he say the pasuk before they wave it or after they wave it?
The pasuk says the second time. It says lokacha kena tanim yadecha. The kohen should take the basket from your hands. V'inicha lefnei Hashem alakecha, and you should put it.
No, but does he say Does he say the thing about my forefathers and all that stuff? Does he say that before,
afterwards?
After they wave it.
Yeah.
And the kohen.
The Kohenim made it, that's it. You bring it to the Kohenim, it's their fruit. Only Kohenim could eat it. Huh? No. No, he's not allowed to eat Bikurim. Bikurim can only be eaten like Truma. Only a Kohen could eat it. In fact, the Gemara is going to say it's capital punishment. The Gemara is going to say, and then starting the next page, when are you Chayiv Misa? If you eat Bikurim, and the top of your test. The Gemara says, when is a Yisrael obligated death for eating Bikurim? In other words, one doesn't get the status of Bikurim that if you eat it, you get killed at a certain time.
Is that only if he eats it in the Beit HaMikdash, or if he eats it outside?
We'll see in the Gemara. Once he comes into the Beit HaMikdash, you can't eat it anymore. In fact, the Gemara is going to, I'm jumping the gun, but the Gemara says on the next page, what happens if the Bikurim is in a basket? Half of it's inside the Beis HaMikdash. Half of it's outside the Beis HaMikdash. And the guy eats the half outside the Beis, no problem. It's not Bikurim. It has to be in the Beis HaMikdash. If it's out, half and half. The Gemara tells a story in Baba Basra. One of the greatest sages of the Gemara was Rabbi Yirmiyah. He used to ask a lot of questions. And they used to throw him out of the Beis HaMikdash a lot for asking such far-fetched questions. So the Gemara tells the din that if you have a chicken coop, any chicken, any bird, which is within 50 cubits of the chicken coop, and we assume who does it belong to. If you find chickens outside the chicken coop, so within 50 cubits of the chicken coop, we assume it's from that chicken coop. Why the Gemara says? Because birds jump around up to 50 amas. So Rabbi Yirmiyah says, what happens if the bird has 1 foot in, 1 foot out? So he threw him out. So the Gemara Taisus explains interestingly. They didn't throw him out. They didn't throw him out because it's impossible. Because, of course, it's possible. Yet many times the Gemara discusses if it's this way. Moshe, in the olden times, a man used to be able to throw a get at his wife. Not nowadays. Don't get any ideas. You're able to throw a get at your wife. So the Gemara says, if you throw it to your wife, if it's closer to her, she's divorced. If it's not closer to her, it's closer to you. It's not. What happens is exactly in the middle. So you find all over the Gemara, you know, half and half. Okay? The Gemara says, about Havdalah candles, the Gemara in Bracha says, by Havdalah candles, if it's a fire of Goyim, so we assume it's Avodah Zarah, it's idol worshipping, you can't make Barim or Eish on fire of Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says, if the majority are Goyim, you can't use the candle. If the majority is Jews, you could. And then the Gemara says, what happens 50-50? So obviously, you know, it's possible to have the candle 50-50. So Taisa says, the reason they threw him out was because the Chacham said 50, it means 50. Not 50 and a half. He basically was asking 50 and a half. 50 is 50 and that's it. Don't debate what the Chacham say. You know, 50, yeah, 50 and a half, not, you know. So.
What, did they put him in Zachar?
No, they threw him out for a while. Then they took him back in. There was another rabbi that asked the Shaila. Two head Shaila. The Gemara tells a story. There was a guy that asked the Shaila, they're talking about Pinyan Aben. No. They're talking about Bar Mitzvah. So they asked the Shaila, what happens if a guy has two heads? Which head does he put the tefillin on? What's the... So the Gemara says, listen, the guy asked the Shaila, so they threw him out of Beis Medrash. So the Gemara says, Eliyahu Navi stuck up for the guy, and he came to the Beis Medrash dressed as a person, and he asked the Shaila to the Beis Medrash, my wife just gave birth to a baby with two heads, and it's a firstborn, how many pinyan abens do I have to do? So they said, oh, so then the Shaila of the two-head tefillin is a possibility. This kid's going to grow up, and he might have two heads. By the way, it's not such a far-fetched thing if you have Siamese twins. Connected at the head, you have two heads and one body. Think about it. In today's world, it's very possible. Yeah. I mean, nowadays, they separate. What happens if they don't? You have these, what are those girls that were
yeah,
connected, but they have two heads and connected to the rest of the body.
They don't
no. Yeah, one head Rashi, one head Rabbeinu Tam at the same time. It was a good idea, Mordechai. Huh? What? Yeah, but anyway, so these things, by the way, do come about, you know, if it's half in, half out, I mean, these are possibilities, you know, that you have to measure times, and when the Torah says something, it means exact, you know. You know, if you have to eat a kazayis matzah, if you eat a minus a drop, you're not yates of the mitzvah, you didn't do the mitzvah. The Torah says you have to eat a kazayis, it's a kazayis, you don't need it, you don't need it. Anyway, okay, let's just finish the next piece of Gemara very quickly. My time, the Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Why does Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov say that v'hinachta means waving? So he says, because one pasuk says yod, and another pasuk says yod. One pasuk says hand, one pasuk says hand, by shlamim. Here it says the word, v'olaka ha-kain atanam yadecha. The kain should take the basket from his hand. So it says the word hand. By karbon shlamim, it says over here, yod of tviyana, his hands shall bring, okay, Eis Ishe Hashem, the sacrifices of God. Now, over there it also says hand. Now, Ma Laha, Ma Kan Koyin, just like over here is a Koyin, over there it also means a Koyin. And Ma Laha Lambailam, just over here it means the owners have to bring it. Over there, it also means the owners. What does it mean? Okay, Tzad. So, okay, the question is, how can both people wave it? One pasuk says the kohen waves it. One pasuk says the owner waves it. So how does it work? So the Gemara says, like we saw, okay, Tzad. Maniach kohen yod of tachas yadei bailim. The kohen puts his hands underneath the owner's hands. So the owner is holding the basket. The kohen puts his hand underneath the owner's hand. And the main if they do it together. Okay, we'll stop here next test of blue piece of Gemara.